guys, welcome back to Wine, Crime, and TV Time. I'm Kaylee.
And I'm Emily.
And today we're going to cover the case of Darlee Routier from Rowlett, Texas. And Emily, I don't think that you've ever heard of this, right?
No.
Which is so crazy to me because this is like literally one of my favorite, not favorite, I think that sounds a little weird.
This is my favorite murder. Wait, shout out.
But no, it's like one of the most interesting like murders that I've ever found. And I find that like I go back and forth with my opinion on it. Like I know what my opinion is, but I'm also like conflicted about it, if that makes sense. But I sent Emily the there's this blogger that I like love that does analysis of 911 calls. And I sent that to Emily to have her read because I always find that really interesting. And I wonder what your takeaway was.
Well, I, to be honest, didn't read the entire thing because...
It's a lot.
Yeah, I read the beginning because I had, like, no idea about this case at all. I read probably a good 75% of it.
You heard a lot.
This bitch crazy.
Yeah. That's my take. Especially based on that. And...
Yeah.
I'm going to try to kind of, like, stay as factual as possible and, like, not give any side more coverage than the other when I'm, like, giving the facts. I don't want to come across, like, I believe that she did it or I believe that she didn't. I just want to, like, put out there what's there. So I kind of just want to get right in because there's kind of a lot. So I have here that Darlee Peck Routier, her maiden name is Peck, was born on January 4th, 1970 in Altoona, Pennsylvania, which, like, is that's not like, far from where you are.
Yeah.
2 hours?
Probably, yeah.
Right? Yeah. So I have in June of 1996, she was a 26-year-old mother, and she was married to Darren Routier, and they had 3 children together. Devin was 6 years old, Damon was 5, and Drake was 8 months. So literally a family of D's.
I hate the name Drake.
Which, like, right, Drake. Like, nobody's allowed to name their kid Drake because there's, like, a superstar named Drake. So,
but also it makes me think of the kid from, what was it, Teen Mom 3 or something? Or was it a 16 and Pregnant episode?
I forgot about that.
The white trash
family. I think it was 16 and Pregnant.
Oh, I didn't know if they made it onto the other... Whatever. Okay, yeah.
So the two met when Darren was working with Darlee's mom, who is also named Darlee. I'm going to refer to her as Darlee Key because
yay.
She went by. And he was a cook at the Western Sizzler in Lubbock, Texas.
That's where Mark lives.
Really?
Yeah.
Close to home.
Also, used to love Sizzler.
Oh, me too. Remember the one by the Rockaway Mall?
Yep. I was devastated when it closed.
Oh, good. Me and my friend used to go to the Hilton Hotel and stay there and, like, go there for dinner. So, apparently he had heard, like, how beautiful Darlee Key's daughter was. And Darlee Key's like, hell yeah, my daughter's good looking. And I believe Darren was 17 and Darlee was 15 at the time. So they dated, and they dated for about 3 years before they got married in August of 1988. So they were really young, especially her. I mean, she got married at 18.
Ugh.
And they decided to move to Rowlett, Texas, which was a very affluent suburb of Dallas. And they wanted to, like, start a family together. So Darren started his own electronic company, and it seemed to do really well. Like, they made decent money. And they seemed to go on a lot of vacations. Darren purchased a lot of flashy jewelry for Darlee. Like, she had all sorts of rings and necklaces and bracelets and whatever. They owned a 1982 Jaguar. They had a 30-foot cabin cruiser boat.
Holy shit.
Yeah, they spent, like, thousands of dollars renovating their home. And they had, like, a 3,000-square-foot home. Like, it was a big home. Cool. And it's just the two of them at this point. So...
Everything's bigger in Texas.
Everything is bigger, including Darlee's boobs, because Darren spent, like, thousands of dollars for her to have an augmentation.
Mm.
And this is before even having kids.
I want a boob job.
Right? Like, where's Dennis? And back then, he spent $2,000, and that was considered a lot on a breast augmentation. I'm like, could you remember? Could you imagine? Like, I had mine done, and it was, again, it was a reduction. It wasn't an augmentation. It was like 10 grand. So I feel like a real boob job has got to be like, what, 15?
Yeah.
12?
I have a friend who financed her boob job.
Which is so crazy to me.
She's got great boobs now, though. She didn't have any before.
It's definitely worth it.
And they look like natural.
I will say about this case, and I'll get into this a little later, like, that becomes, like, a really big point
in
the trial, yeah. Okay. A big point.
Ha-ha!
So, Darlie gave birth to their first son less than a year into their marriage. She had Devin, and Devin was born June 14th, 1989. About a year and a half later, she had Damon, and he was born February 19th, 1991. Which is Evie's birthday.
Mm.
And then 4.5 years later, almost five, they had Drake, baby Drake, on October 18th, 1995. And I literally have in my notes so many D names again. Like, why?
Like, I don't understand why people do that.
Right?
I also don't understand why people, like, women name their daughters after themselves. Sorry, don't get it.
Right. I also found that a little, like, weird. I find that almost, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, self, like...
selfish?
Obsessed? I don't know.
Yeah.
I just think that's so weird that they both had the name Darlie. But...
oh, not a great name, but whatever.
So, Devin was known to be the really silly one. He was always making everybody laugh. He was making silly faces. He was very rambunctious and outgoing and fun. And I think that that's kind of funny because Devin was a Gemini.
Oh.
And Geminis are known to be, like, the fun, like, carefree, like, good time, outgoing people. Mm-hmm. And Damon, the one who was, like, a year younger, he was much more quiet and he would still let Darlie hold him. And again, he was 5 years old. So that's pretty old to let your mom, like, still be, like, very nurturing to you. He would let her hold him, and he was very sweet and loving, and he wasn't really that rambunctious, so he was kind of like the polar opposite of Devin, which I also find a little funny because he was a Pisces, and Pisces are known to be very, like, kind and sweet, and, like, they, like, are very nurturing, and they love to be loved, and are super sensitive, so I found that a little interesting, but...
stop describing yourself.
I love myself so much. I'm a Pisces with a Gemini rising, so I got really speaks to me. Darlie was actually known to be the mom in the neighborhood that always was making cookies and all the other kids would go to play at. And Darren and Darlie actually helped a cancer patient in their neighborhood to make a mortgage payment when they couldn't afford it. Cancer patient couldn't. Like, they were known to be really good people, really nice people. But they were in quite a bit of debt after having...
I wonder why.
Right. And, like, they had all these boys, and then Darlie was still spending the same amount of money, but Darren wasn't really making the same amount of money. So it seems kind of like after Drake was born was when everything kind of, I don't know, hit the fan. Like, okay, like, we're a little broke. So the business started to plummet, and it went downhill. And they actually applied for a loan of, like, $5,000, but were rejected because of how in debt they were.
Holy shit. I think get a loan for $5,000 if I needed to.
Right.
Well, I can't. I have a mortgage. But...
right. Like, for a five... I guess then it's a different time. Like, this is 1996 we're talking about.
What do you think it was? $10,000?
$5,000?
But, like, do you think that, like, it would be today's $10,000, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But let me tell you a little bit of backstory about how in debt they were. Because the $5,000, the reason they didn't get approved for that was because of how in debt they were. And they were about $10,000 in debt to back taxes, which in Texas at the time, like, their taxes had to be pretty low because taxes in Texas now are still really low. Like, it's pretty efficient to live in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And... they had $12,000. They were $12,000 in debt to credit card bills. So, I mean, right there, that's $22,000 in debt. And that's not including what their mortgage was. We don't know what their mortgage was. Mm-hmm. But the house went for sale in, I'm not sure exactly when, And it was listed at like 190 or something like that, which is bonkers to me. Like, we are from an area that, like,
that well, gets you a garage.
Thousands square feet. Especially, it was a nice house. Like, they renovated it. It was in good shape, you know? So, yeah, and I think that at this point in time, like, you know, Darlie still wanted to live that life of, like, spending and, like, keeping up with the Joneses and getting what she wants and getting her kids what they want. And they're feeding three mouths. Like, it's a lot. It's a lot. And after Drake was born, Darlie really started to suffer from postpartum depression. Ugh. And back then, nobody really knew about it and nobody really talked about it. Like, it was just so different then. So I don't really know how she dealt with that. I don't know if at the time she even knew that's what it was. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah. Because, I mean, like, now it's very, everyone knows. But then.
Right, it's common.
Acknowledged, yeah.
So I kind of want to start getting into what led up to June 6th, 1996. And we're going to talk a bit about what went on June 5th, so the night before. According to Darlie's statement that evening, she made dinner for her family and her sister, Dana. She was actually coming over for dinner as well. She had been working with Darren at the shop, and the two came back to the house, had dinner, and talked about how happy they were, that the business had been doing so well since the last few months had been so slow, which I find a little interesting because of maybe the day or two after this whole thing happened, they talked about how bad business was doing. You know what I mean? So I find her statement a little weird.
Right.
Off the bat. And later that night, Darren drove Dana home. And I didn't mention this, but Darren and Dana actually came to Darlie and Darren's home together. So Dana's her sister. There's so many D's. They came to the home together. Apparently they worked together. Yeah, I don't know. The fact that she kept mentioning her sister and the fact that they came to the house together and then they all had dinner and then Darren drove her home, I just find a little bit weird. And the fact that they were alone together so much. I could be wrong, but
whatever. No, but that's like a female's mindset. Like, I would think the same way.
Yeah, like when I was reading her statement, because this is literally coming from her statement. So this is Darlie's statement. I'm like, why is it so important to her to make a point that Darren and Darlie spent so much time alone together?
Right.
Darren and Dana.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So regardless of that, Darren came home about 25 minutes later, according to Darlie, which doesn't leave much time if, like, he was having an affair with her sister. You know what I'm saying?
It might have been a quickie. Right. She might have lived right next door.
Sure. So he was home 25 minutes later. Darlie made everybody popcorn while they all watched TV. And Devin and Damon asked if they could have a sleepover in the living room with Darlie. Darlie had been sleeping on the couch for a few weeks now. Because apparently baby Drake would wake her when he would, like, turn over in his crib. Like, not even, like, cry out. Like, he would turn over in his crib. And the crib was next to her bed.
Oh, okay.
So he would wake her. Which, I have my own opinions on that. Because, like, I just feel like when you have a baby, like, you have three kids now. You know what to expect. Like,
this is not your first rodeo.
Right. Like, this is your child. You're a stay-at-home mom. You should be getting up with your kid in the middle of the night. Do you know what I mean? Like, I found that really weird.
Mm-hmm.
So, apparently, the boys and baby Drake all fell asleep around the same time, around, like, 8 o'clock. And Darren brought Drake up to his crib and came back downstairs. According to Darlie, he and Darlie talked a little bit about Darlie's depression, the financial problems they were having, and she claims they had a few words between them. But he told her he loved her and gave her a kiss.
Did they have an emotional conversation?
Right? Like, this is a flashback for me to, like, Chris Watts. Well, not a flashback, I guess a flash forward. But yeah, he told her, I have literally in quotes, but he told me he loved me and gave me a kiss, she claims. She says that they laid together for a few hours until 12:30 or 1 o'clock. And he told me he loved me and gave me a kiss. She says it again, which I find a little weird that...
If you have to keep repeating yourself, you're lying.
Do you know what I mean? Like, how many times did that really happen? The words between you is weird. Also, you're talking about your financial problems after you said earlier you were talking about how happy you were that the shop was doing well. So a little strange.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently, he goes upstairs to go to bed, turns on his TV for a few minutes, and falls asleep. And their stories match up for the most part. I mean, there's some, like, inconsistencies, but that's going to happen.
Right.
Until he goes upstairs. So now, Darley claims she, and this is in quotes, started to get sleepy, and the next thing, I wake up and feel pressure on me. I felt Damon press on my right shoulder and heard him cry. This made me really come awake and realize there was a man standing down at my feet walking away from me. I walked over to him and heard glass breaking. I got halfway through the kitchen and turned back around to run and turn the lights on. I ran back towards the utility room and realized there was a big white-handled knife lying on the floor. It was then that I realized I had blood all over me, and I grabbed the knife thinking he was in the garage, so I thought he might still be there, and I yelled for Darren. That's a direct statement that she says, and she goes on to kind of like... claim how she picked up the knife from there and placed it on the counter. And Darren came running down the stairs with his jeans on. Now, Darren, in his statement, claims that he ran down the stairs without his pants on and had to actually run upstairs to go put jeans on when first responders arrived. So I found that a little weird, but it could mean nothing.
Right.
He also claims that Darley was yelling Devin, not Darren. Which at first I found a little weird, but then I started thinking about it and I was like, Devin and Darren sound so similar, especially from upstairs.
Yeah, in their 3,000 square foot house.
Yeah, like that could mean nothing. Exactly. So Darren runs over to where he remembers seeing Devin last and finds him on the ground and tries to give him CPR. But when he sees blood everywhere.
Right.
When he blows into his mouth, blood and mucus spilled out of Devin's chest.
Oh, God.
So like literally, yeah, like crazy. At this point, Damon was still alive and barely breathing, so Darren moved over to try to give CPR to him because it's pretty obvious that Devin is not going to make it.
Yeah.
All during this, Darley is on the phone with a 911 operator for about 6 minutes. A little weird. So, I kind of wanted to go into the 911 call and play a little bit. But there's so much of it because it's 6 minutes long that I don't really know how to, like, break up the clips. But basically, I'm just going to kind of give a little bit of a synopsis about the 911 call. She kind of says, we've had a break-in. They stabbed me and my two sons and my babies, my boys. She's, like, frantic. I mean, you read the... Right? Like, you read the transcript? Yeah. She's frantic. At one point, she says something about, like, the operator says not to touch anything. And Darley's like, I picked up the knife already. And then she says something like, oh, we could have gotten fingerprints from them, maybe. And she keeps referring. She starts off saying that a man came in. This was a man. He had a baseball cap. He was dressed in all black and jeans. It was a tall white man. So what I find interesting is she also says she never saw his face. So he had a sleeve on and jeans. How do you know he was a white man, first of all? And second of all, she always refers to this as they, not him. She keeps saying they, which is a little weird because there was one person, not two. So I don't know. But after first responders arrive, Darren claims that he ran across the street to his neighbor's house to ask for help with Drake. He also claims he ran out a second time across the street, exclaiming, we have to find out who did this. So at this point, Darley is rushed to the hospital for her injuries because she was also injured. I'll kind of go more into the injuries, but she was injured as well. And Damon was actually also taken to the hospital, but he passed away in the ambulance.
Aww.
Super sad. Yeah, so I want to talk a little bit like on the injuries. Devin suffered 2 stab wounds to the chest that went all the way through his back to the floor. This is the older child. Devin is the mm-hmm. older one, and Damon is the younger one. An incised wound on the left arm, about a an eighth of an inch deep, a stab wound to the posterior left thigh, so like the underside of his left thigh, and a stab wound to the palm of his left hand, his right arm below the elbow, and his left upper arm all had abrasions. And there was a greenish contusion on his hip and two brown contusions on his right lower leg. So that to me says that he kicked his feet up, you know what right. I'm saying? Like right. to fight back. Because why would he have a stab wound on his
thigh,
underside thigh?
Yeah.
Damon, however, he was sleeping on his stomach. So he had two incised wounds. So stab wounds, but not super deep, and four stab wounds to the back. Yeah, like really bad. He had four abrasions and contusions on his upper back and also right arm. Now, Darlie had suffered a superficial wound to her neck about 3.5 inches long, starting at like the top right of her throat. And it like angled down towards her left armpit almost. Like that's how it angled down.
They did it pop her, her implants?
Yeah, it did not touch her implants. They also noticed a gap in her scar, so it, or in her cut. So it kind of stopped and then started again. And that's kind of known as I was reading into this. It's known as like a hesitation cut, which means that like you're thinking about something. Like there's a reason that you didn't cut straight across. You cut.
So, like, maybe cut. She was like cutting herself and then she's like, this fucking hurts. I'm gonna stop for a second and then continued.
Sure. Or maybe the person cutting her for some god unknown reason was like, oh, I feel bad about this. Maybe I should stop. And then
did. Like, just kidding.
And she, I also wanted to say, it says Darlie suffered a superficial wound on her neck. That doesn't mean fake, right. Because I think a lot of people in this case, like, take that as fake. It just means that it cut through skin and tissue, like, it cut through your tissue, but it didn't cut through the muscle.
Right.
So, it couldn't have been, there wasn't much pressure there. She also had a stab wound on her right arm. It wasn't very deep from what I saw. It was more of a, like, nick. Like, it kind of was, like, the knife, like, jabbed into her arm. She had cuts to her middle and ring finger right in, like, the crease. And that was on her right hand. And then she had a cut to her left cheek and a bruise to the inside of her left wrist. So I kind of want to talk about her bruises.
Okay.
Have you ever seen her bruises? I kind of want you to go.
I will look.
Yeah, go Google Darlie Routier injuries so we can kind of talk about that for a minute. So first I want you to look at the third row down center picture. Do you see that bruise?
Yeah, where she's holding it up.
Yeah, and go over to the left one to that. Do you see like how like intense that bruise is?
Yeah.
So that was taken on June 10th. So this is 4 days after the murder.
Okay.
And the bruise, you can see, is still red and purple. Like, it hasn't really, like, changed. I want you to go to the first picture that is on this site. It's her in a hospital bed.
Right.
This is the day of the murder. And if you look, there is no bruise like that on that.
No. Arm,
which is weird.
Oh, my God.
Right? Super weird. Now, she did have a another bruise, if you go to the last picture that is shown.
Uh-huh, with her, just her wrist.
Yeah, and it may be the way that this picture is taken, because there's other pictures that I've seen of this, where the bruise is actually starting to yellow more. It's actually turning the color more. It's not blue or purple or red.
Mm-hmm.
And when a bruise is showing up as blue, purple, or red, it usually indicates that the bruise was inflicted within, like, 48 hours of the picture being taken. Huh. So, the fact that this is 4 days later is a little suspect, right?
I would think, yeah, for sure.
And the doctors, or all the medical personnel, like the nurses and everything, claim that they had seen no sign of any bruising when they treated her from June 6th to June 8th. And they didn't see any swelling that could turn into bruising either.
What the fuck?
Super weird. because a lot of Darlie supporters want to say, like, that's proof that, like, she was fighting off an attacker and stuff. And I'm sorry, but looking at those bruises, how the hell does that even happen?
No. She, like, threw her body off, like, a
door or beat with a bat.
Yeah.
It's pretty bad. I feel like it's self-inflicted. And the only way that I could see any of this making sense is if, like I said, Damon had stab wounds almost into his butt. If he was kicking her.
Yeah. Yeah. You but know, also that wouldn't take so long to show up, I feel like. Yeah.
That was an intense bruise. That's what makes me think, like, that was not... crazy. Right? So I kind of want to talk about the evidence that was collected at the crime scene. And we have that, like, really weird 911 call where, like I said, she keeps saying they, even though she said it was a white 6-foot male.
Mm-hmm.
She says, my babies are dying, yet she did nothing to help them. But she held a towel to her neck wound consistently the whole time. And a little bit of confusion here, because certain sources state that the officer told her to sit down and calm down and not help the boys. But Officer Waddell claims that he repeatedly asked her to help and she did nothing. So that's a little strange to me. Like, why aren't you helping your boys? And the entire 6 minutes of that 911 call, and granted, her husband is giving CPR or trying to the kids, but she's not asking the 911 operator, like, how can I help? What can I do? Like, what can I do to make my, like, you know what I mean?
Right, like, if those were your kids, you would try and do everything in your power to save them before yourself, you would think.
Yeah, I'd like to
That's what a normal person would do, I feel like.
Yeah, unless you're a sociopath.
Well.
But she also says in the 911 call that she picked up the knife from the floor in the utility room. So in that, like, portion I had said before, she says that, oh, we maybe could have gotten prints off of it. Like, it's just a weird thing to say at the time. And I do fully believe in, like, 911 analysis and, like, word analysis. Like, what you say and what you mean can be two different things and stuff like that. However, I don't put, like, all of my energy into it. Like, I'm not like, oh, this is the evidence. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
But I find it weird that she picked up the knife from the floor in the utility room where the assailant dropped it when escaping through the garage. And there was no blood evidence that the knife was ever on the floor in the utility room or dropped and fell there. So if you had committed three murders, I think there would be blood on that to fall on the floor and make an imprint. But there was evidence that the knife had been at least rested on the carpet in the living room, which is where everything had happened. And in the carpet, there was an outline of blood that matched up pretty much to the outline of the knife. And it was heavier in the imprint where the tip of the knife would have been. And from what I've read and watched, this is very consistent with somebody holding the knife, like, down while they were bleeding, while they were dripping blood.
Oh, wow. And
what happens is, like, it pools at the tip and starts to drip on the ground before you put it on the ground. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, because in this imprint, the blood at the tip was a lot heavier than the rest of the blood in the outline.
Right.
So aside from this, there was no evidence that anyone was in the garage aside from one garage window being open and the screen was split. Officer Waddell walked up to this window and noticed there was dust on the windowsill undisturbed.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
He also sucks at this.
Right. He also noticed that right outside the window, there were no footprints in the mulch bed, which where the mulch bed was, you wouldn't necessarily have to walk through it to walk out that back window. Like, it was kind of off to the side, so it doesn't necessarily mean anything. However, there were no bloody footprints leading through the garage or out that window or whatever. Police also noticed that the Routiers had a floodlight outside of the garage, like right outside that window, and it was motion sensed. So it would stay on for 17 minutes after it was activated.
That's a long motion.
That's a really long time, right?
I had one growing up, and it was not 17 minutes.
It was
also be 15 or 20. Sorry.
Right. Why 17? So the weird thing about that is Darlik's 911 call lasted 6 minutes, and the officers arrived at the 4 minute mark of that call. You can hear her talking to them and them arriving. So that means that they got there in 2 minutes, which I will say is like amazing on the Rowlett Police Department that they got there in 2 minutes. But if somebody had left through that back door and she picked up the phone immediately to call, that light would have still been on when detectives got there. So that's a little strange. They also noticed that the gate on the fence in the back of the house was broken and a little difficult to open, which would have made like the perpetrator kind of like struggle getting out, stalling the time and prolonging that motion sensored light. So during the phone call, you also hear Darlik tell the first responder on the scene, because she's still on this phone call when they showed up, like I said, she says, "Look out in the garage. They left a knife lying on the," and trails off. And the dispatcher on the phone says, "Don't touch anything." Darlik replies, "I already touched it and picked it up." About a minute later, she mentions the knife again and says, "I wonder if we could have gotten the prints maybe." Also, I want to make a note that there is no mention or sound from Darren until 43 seconds into the audio of the phone call. And she claims her husband just ran down the stairs at 43 seconds. 43 seconds is actually kind of a long time to be on the phone to not, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I find that a little weird, but whatever. So now Darlik told officers that she had chased this assailant through the kitchen and heard glass break. After bloodstain analysis was done, it was found that the drops on the kitchen floor were actually consistent with somebody standing there and walking slowly, not running and chasing after somebody as she described her actions to be.
It's so cool how they like can figure that shit out. Yes, I love
there's
that.
There's this thing I was reading about it, and it's like called like high velocity blood splatter. So like,
yeah,
like take a dropper and like kind of like drop it as they're moving and stuff.
Yeah,
I was like watching them do it on the show.
Like, I remember watching the staircase one, and they like did this, like they splattered it everywhere and like different angles. It's cool.
And like smacked the sponge.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
It's awesome.
I also found that interesting.
Yeah.
The only bloody footprints in the kitchen were Darlik's bare feet. There were no other footprints that could be found through all the blood. So there were no like shoes or anything like that. It was just her feet, which I would like to say doesn't necessarily mean anything, but I can't imagine that you're like committing this crazy crime of stabbing three people or stabbing two people and slicing one person. Ugh. That you have no blood on you whatsoever. I don't think that's true. However, if he were running out first and he had no blood on him and she were running out behind him, then maybe I can understand why that would be. But I really don't understand that. So there also was broken glass, and that lied on top of the footprints and the blood. So that means that it wasn't knocked over in a scuffle. It also wasn't mixed with blood. Like, you couldn't see blood in the top pieces at all. It was literally just sitting underneath. And that would mean that the glass is undisturbed. And the reason I say that is because there's a lot of people out there that, like, truthfully believe that Darlik is innocent. And they like to say that it was, like, contamination that a police officer, like, kind of, like, may have kicked the glass or moved the glass or something like that and got blood. Got it on top of the blood, but that would mean there would be blood in other parts of it, you know?
Right.
So she also had no glass in her feet, and Darren also had no glass in his feet. Like, no cuts, no glass, no anything. And the wine rack that the glass fell out of that she claimed that he had bumped, like, the assailant bumped into and knocked one glass off of.
Ooh.
Because if you're knocking into, like, a wine rack, like, aren't you knocking...
You would knock them all over.
Right?
Or at least, like, a good amount.
Right. So, but the thing about this one was it had locks at the end of where the wine glasses hung for the specific reason that somebody couldn't run around and knock it off, probably because they had kids.
Yeah.
And on top of that, there was an ice bucket sitting on top of this wine, not on the wine rack, but on the little table at the wine rack. And that was totally undisturbed. Like, wouldn't an ice bucket, if a wine glass had fallen out and was locked in, wouldn't the ice bucket have fallen out too?
Yeah, you would think.
Yeah. I would think. So there was
she's sloppy.
She's so sloppy. There was a vacuum cleaner overturned, also with blood only underneath and not on top of it, aside from Darlie's on the handle.
Why did she try and vacuum up the blood?
No. It was, like, kind of overturned, so, like, it looked like a scuff.
Oh, God.
But she claims that the reason that her blood was on the handle was because she was using it as, like, a cane because she was so wounded and tired to get back and forth between the rooms. Okay. So that's interesting, I guess. Yeah. Now, over the kitchen sink, there was a significant amount of blood pooled up on the sink itself. Like, you know where you have your sink and there's that tiny, like, bit of counter space in between you and the sink?
Right.
So that had blood all over it. And there were drips all down the cabinet and onto the floor. And when luminol was sprayed, which luminol is a substance that, nobody knows, it basically picks up blood that was washed away. That's mm-hmm. It had shown that blood was clean from the sink and the cabinet. Like, it lit up like a Christmas tree in that sink and on that cabinet, which means somebody wiped that out. And the only blood that was found there, other than a small, minuscule amount of somebody else's, but the only blood found there was Darlie's. So, it's a little weird.
Yeah.
Like, why would this assailant, like, hold you over the kitchen sink? Which, she never even claimed this, but if this were the case, why would he hold you over the kitchen sink to cut your neck, right?
It's just an easier cleanup, so he was just being considerate.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Or sorry, they were being considerate.
They. So also, the bloody footprints. So they show a pattern of leading from the kitchen sink to the living room where, like, the boys were found. And then back to the kitchen sink. There were no footprints leading to the utility room where Darlie claims that she chased the attacker out through the garage. So Darlie claims that she was asleep on the couch when she was attacked, but there was no blood found, no blood of hers, no blood of anybody's found on the couch where her head, neck, shoulders, any of that was laying. There was no blood there, and she was cut at her neck. There was also blood splatter on the back right of Darlie's shirt with both boys' blood in these, like, little teeny, and that's consistent with cast off from, like, moving a knife from up and down over your shoulder and back. And I think that this is my big issue with this case, is, like, I go back to this because there are times that I read about this and I'm like, oh, maybe she is innocent, like, maybe she, like, was just a mom that got convicted and shouldn't be on death row and whatever. And I don't know. There are certain things that I'm also going to touch on that, like, make me question it.
Is she still on death row, or is she dead?
No, she's still on death row.
Okay.
But my whole thing is, I always come back to the blood evidence of this. You know what I mean? And, like, in my mind, whenever I'm, like, researching a case or looking into a case, like, blood doesn't lie. Like,
right.
You can't fake blood. I mean, I guess you could, but
Halloween.
But it's not going to lie. And I think that's my big issue with believing that Darlie's innocent, is the blood. Like, the facts are there with that.
Yeah.
So some other evidence that was collected at the scene was the butcher block, where the knife that was used to kill them was found. So the knife that was used to kill them was actually found in their own butcher block. It wasn't inside of it at the time. Again, it was on the counter because Darlie said that she found it on the floor, which, whatever. But needless to say, this assailant came in and took this butcher block or this butcher knife out of the butcher block, and that's what they used.
If I were going to kill someone and I broke into someone's house, I wouldn't be like, wow, I really hope they have a weapon there.
Right, like, the like, first thing you I would come prepared. Like, oh, let's see. Do they have this weapon?
Yeah.
I just find that so weird.
Yeah.
So yeah, and the weird thing about that though is Devin's blood wasn't found on the knife. So of course, speculators and Darley supporters believe that there is a second knife. Of course. There's some second knife that we don't know about that Devin was stabbed with and Darley and Damon were stabbed with. And I personally think that she wiped the knife at some point, but I'll kind of like get into that a little bit later because I want to talk about the screen in the garage.
Okay.
So the knife block, like I said, was seized as evidence. And when they tested it, they found a small microfiber on the bread knife and it matched exactly to the rod makeup or the rod in the makeup of the screen in that window. And apparently they looked throughout that house and tried to see if there was any other substance that was found like that. And the only thing they could find was that's the screens. So unless they were cutting like other screens in their house.
For fun. That's
it. And it was also only found on the bread knife. And they also want to point out here, and I don't mean to keep saying Darley supporters, but clearly you understand where my stance is on this case.
Yep. But
Darley supporters also believe that this is a cause of cross-contamination, which this is my issue with that whole thing with Darley supporters and the cross-contamination. It's just like, basically they're saying that every person, every detective, every nurse, every investigator is lying or there's cross-contamination. That's the only thing they have to stand on anything. And that frustrates me. So they're claiming that the reason the glass was found on top of the blood is because the crime scene wasn't secure. And then they're claiming that this microfiber is because of cross-contamination. And I honestly started to understand like why they were saying that the microfiber could have been cross-contamination, because if the block had been tested for prints, and then let's say they tested the window screen, and then they went back and used the same brush to test the block, a fiber could have dropped off, right? Like,
I mean, yeah. It
could have. Like, but
1% chance.
Literally. The only logical thought, and the fact that that fiber was found on one knife. They sweeped all those knives, they tested them all, and the fiber was found on one. Not two, not three, not four, one. And it's a knife block. So I can't get behind that. And also, if you look at the picture of the screen, it's literally like one clean slice down the middle with like the ends just flopping. Like if you look at it, there's no, and I'm sure you're bringing it up right now so you can mm-hmm. see, but there's no pulling, there's no tearing. Like, I find that, do you see it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it literally looks like it's just cut. It doesn't look like anything pulled or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And on top of that, the dust wasn't disturbed at all. And people also want to say it was a really thin layer of dust. It doesn't matter that it was thick. It doesn't matter that it was thin. It doesn't matter. The dust wasn't disturbed at the end of the day. And could you climb out that window without disturbing it? Maybe, but you'd have to be so, like, aware. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And the way that screen was, like, to climb out of that, it was, like, a tight squeeze, I feel like. So, yeah. So, another piece of evidence that was collected was about 70 yards away from the house in an alley. So, they say an alley, but this is, like, a little neighborhood. It was kind of, like, behind the houses. And it was a sock that laid in the grass next to a garbage can right above a storm drain. And the sock was actually Darren's. And he testified that it was his from the hamper in the utility room. Like, there was no question of whose it was. On the sock were two small spots of Damon and Devin's blood. And inside the sock was a significant amount of Darley's DNA, which wouldn't have just gotten there from her, like, touching it. She would have had to, like, had her hand in it for a while in order for the DNA to actually transfer.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. It's just all.
So when I was saying, this is the one thing though about this case that, like, when I was saying before, like, I go back and forth, this is the one thing I'm like, why this damn sock? Like, what is the story with the freaking sock? Like, did somebody like actually break in and like had this sock and accidentally dropped it. Like that's the only thing that like goes in my mind that's like, maybe there was an intruder, is this damn sock, because it's 70 yards away. But like I said, the blood evidence always is going to sway in the way of her being guilty. So this is the one thing, like I said, like that this kind of like makes me question it. But I just can't imagine that an intruder took this sock and like, what are the odds that like the sock stuck to him and fell off? Like,
also her DNA is all in it.
It is, but why plant this sock? Like, why put it there? It seems like such a weird step to do. And like I said, she couldn't have left from outside the back of the house. I don't think she would have had enough time to leave outside the back of the house. She would have had to leave the front of the house and go around back. Not, it wasn't right behind her house. Like I said, it was like kind of three houses down. So it's maybe, but it's 70 yards. I mean, for a 26-year-old to run 70 yards real quick.
I can't do that.
Oh. Yeah, but if you were like, you were like in a rush.
Yeah, I guess.
I don't know. This is just, that's one thing that always sticks out of my head. However, I think about the fact that like her hand could have been in the sock while she was stabbing.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So I guess for the most part, like I've pretty much given the evidence and some of Darlie's way of disputing the evidence, even though I can always find a reason why it's not true.
Right.
But Darren testified at trial that the reason Devin's blood is on Darlie's shirt, so behind her, like on her back, all those splatters, is because, oh, and near the sink, is because she was bringing him wet towels back and forth while he was giving CPR. Now, there's no record of Darlie bringing any towels to him. However, I just don't know who the fuck decides to put wet towels on knife wounds.
Yeah.
That's not going to absorb.
No, it's just going to, like, get water all up in there.
Right. And when did she do this? If she called 911 right away, when did she do this? You never hear water or tell him or hear him in the background telling her to bring over the towels.
Bring me another wet towel.
Like, give me a towel. And there was no diluted blood found anywhere but the sink, meaning like the carpet that where these alleged wet towels were used on Devin. There's no diluted blood. The only diluted blood was inside the kitchen sink and on the faucet, which was tested and turned out to be Darlie's and a small trace of another type, but not enough to determine if it were Damon's or Devin's. So again, blood doesn't lie. I stand. Darlie also claimed that her underwear were missing, and when a nurse that following day asked if she had been raped, she said she felt some pressure down there, and that's all she said. But a rape kit came back negative, and there's also thought that this was a botched sexual assault attempt. Weird. So you, like, kill these two kids and then assault their mom?
Yeah.
Weird. Another piece of evidence is that there is literally one partial bloody fingerprint on the glass table, and it's said to not have matched Darlie or Darren. And they believe that it is an adult fingerprint, but they actually tried to exhume the bodies of the boys to see if it matched them, and they couldn't get anything because water had seeped into their casket, so they couldn't get anything. And this could be enough to grant Darlie a new trial, but it's one fingerprint.
Right.
Like, how is it that this assailant left one fingerprint and no other, like, trace of himself?
Right.
So I just find that a little weird, but I kind of want to go back to the sock again because I always go back to that. And I started thinking about what could have happened with that. Like, what if Darlie used that to, like, so she wouldn't leave fingerprints, like I was saying before, and, like, took that and her underwear that are, like, missing, so she says, and went and to like, throw them in the storm drain that the sock was right above, but, like, missed. Or, like, even just took the sock and threw it and maybe even thought she would, like, throw investigators off. I really don't know, but it always pops in my head. And also the fact that Darren ran out of the house twice after investigators arrived. Like, they were inside. And remember how I was saying how, like, he ran out to the neighbors twice or, like, across the street twice? Like, he was saying how he, like, brought Drake there, and then he was like, we need to find who killed Darley. Like, he ran over there to say that.
Right.
I find that really weird, and I'm still not necessarily convinced of his innocence either, but they looked into
him. I was going to ask you about your opinion of that.
I don't know. I'm not convinced. And this is the other weird thing. And this is, like, the big issue I have with this sock. It was Darren's sock. Like, right. It wasn't Darley's. It wasn't Damon's. It wasn't Devin's. It was Darren's. Why would this assailant even have this sock?
Right.
Like, you mean to tell me he just, like, decided to go in your laundry bin and take your sock, like, and get, like, they were literally two little drops of each of the boys' blood on this sock and Darley's DNA inside of it. So, like, he's going into your hamper to take your sock. Like, it's not like it's one of the kids' socks that's at the scene.
Right.
Like, I just
it wasn't like a souvenir.
Yeah. I also find it weird that this assailant comes unarmed and uses one of the routier's knives in the murders. And beyond that, like, let's say that that stupid bread knife was a cause of cross-contamination. So you're telling me that this intruder comes with a knife, cuts the screen, but then grabs a different knife inside of the house to kill these people?
Yeah, that just doesn't make sense.
And then he leaves it. He leaves it there, drops it and leaves it. And leaves one fingerprint? Like, these are the things that I'm like, I can't, like, fathom that she didn't do it.
You know what I mean? All signs point to yes. She did it.
Yeah. And so I've read so many times, and I actually even watched, because so many people find her innocent, and I think that that's based solely on The Last Defense. Have you heard of that? Uh-uh. It's like an ABC show, and it was a four-part, I mean, I think it was an eight-part series, but there was four parts dedicated to Darley, and it's about people on death row that are possibly innocent. So many people take that, and, like, that's their source of information in believing in her innocence. But so many people think that this intruder theory actually has something to do with an insurance fraud scheme. So, apparently, Darren was seeking out somebody to help him commit insurance fraud and break into his house, steal some things. He collects the insurance money, gets his things back, and they split the money. I suppose he was going to do this because he was in such debt. And so a lot of people think that this was someone who he had talked to about doing this just because they felt like coming in and killing his family instead for nothing. Just
adding on a little bit more fun.
So weird. And he never hired anybody to do it. Like, he never had actually hired anybody to take this on.
Right.
But he allegedly even talked to his father-in-law, so Darley's, I think it's actually her stepfather, about this.
About committing fraud?
Yeah, about the whole, like, fraud thing. Okay. He talked to him about hiring somebody to, like, come in and steal their shit and whatever. Also, I feel like the break-in, like, even if this were a burglar, like, theory, really doesn't work because nothing was stolen. Like, her rings and jewelry were sitting right on the countertop.
Right, if you're going to, like, murder two people and attempt to murder a third, at least steal something. Like...
Right.
Have, and, like...
You came in and killed two little boys and left the adult alive. So, like, your MO was to, like, stab these little boys to death and give, like, a superficial cut to this woman.
Yeah.
And that's what I also find weird, I want to say really quick, is that these boys were stabbed. Like, a motion of back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. She was sliced. Like, those are two different types of wounds.
Yeah.
Which to me says, I don't, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, she's guilty. That's what it says to me.
So, the only thing I can't comprehend about this is the motive. Because she was known to be a really good mom, right? Like, she, I don't know. There was no, like,
But you said she had postpartum.
She did, and I also have that. I said, aside from her postpartum depression and her stress about money, I can't seem to find the motive here.
Kill your husband.
Right. The boys only had a $5,000 each life insurance policy, and most of that money wound up going to funeral expenses. However, she did have a journal, and she seemed to write in that a bit. And in one entry of May of 1996, which is just, I think that's just like 1 month before the murder, she writes, "I hope you can forgive me for what I'm about to do," and puts it. Like, she kind of goes on and just talks about, like, committing suicide and how she loves them so much, but she can't go on anymore and this, that, and the other thing. It seemed like she was going to take her own life. So, I don't know. I just keep going back, and it's, like, so hard for me to understand the why here, but, like, I feel like there are so many cases we look into, and there's no answer for the why, mm-hmm. and there's never going to be a good one.
Like Chris Watts.
And the only thing I could also think is, like, she did this because she's, like, my boys don't deserve to live, like, with me so depressed. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
she's selfish.
And maybe she thought she was going to kill herself and then didn't really want to.
Yeah. Maybe maybe that's what she was attempting to do when she was slicing herself.
Maybe.
But also, why did she, like, not kill her baby then? Like,
right, and you, like, stabbed them? Like, and that's the thing that I always go back to is, like, if it were an intruder, stabbing is such, like, an intimate, like, way of killing somebody. Like, it's so up close and personal and, like, intense,
right?
It's not going in and putting a bullet in somebody's head,
right?
So the fact that she stabbed them, and, like, she stabbed them quite a few times, and two of them,
mm-hmm.
So I don't know. But after the murders took place, I want to talk a little bit about what would eventually become, and if you read anything about this, if you listen to any podcast, if you watch any YouTube video, everybody says what would be Darlie's hole in the coffin, or nail in the coffin. Not hole. Nail in the coffin. After about a week after the murders, on June 14th, 1996, it was Devin's birthday. And I feel like this is one of those things that if you don't know about this case, you may recognize it by hearing about the silly string incident. Which it's so funny because I said this before. I'm sitting at a desk and I literally there's silly string sitting here, which is kind of weird.
I have so many questions.
So yeah, this became known as the silly string incident. Mm-hmm. So on Devin's birthday, there's video footage of the family at the gravesite, and they're all singing happy birthday and they're spraying silly string at his grave. All the while, like, Darlie is happy and laughing and sticking her tongue out and smacking her gum, like, chomping at this gum. So this, like, really,
her son died a week before, like, he was murdered.
Who?
Her son. And she's all happy.
Right. Yeah, both of her kids have been murdered, like, tragically a week before, and this is how she's acting.
Chilling, smacking her gum.
Like, literally chomping, smacking. Like, it was the most annoying thing to watch.
I don't know why that just reminded me of your mom. Maybe a picture of Kim.
But it really painted a bad picture in a lot of people's minds because there were newscasters and stuff there. So they were recording this. And this got out to the media, and everybody was, like, up in arms and blah, 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 blah. Who does this? And, you know, I actually kind of disagree with this.
Oh.
And I, like, find her gum chomping the most fucking obnoxious thing I've ever seen. Like, it literally drives me nuts. However, I don't know that there's a proper way to grieve. And I can understand, like, they wouldn't want me to be sad. Like, they loved silly string. They always played with silly string. Like, I can kind of get it. Is it weird? Is it inappropriate? 100%. Sure. Yes, it is. However, that wouldn't be her nail in the coffin for me. Her nail in the coffin for me would be all the other evidence. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, what was your takeaway from the silly string incident?
That she's a fucking psychopath. Like, that is not normal behavior of your kids that were just murdered.
Right. So, I think it's very weird. But like I said, that wouldn't be, like, the thing that convicts her for me. However, only 40
days. I would say it was the nail on the coffin.
Right, and that's what I mean. It's like, everybody describes it as the nail in the coffin. And I'm like, that's weird. But, so she was convicted 40 days later. Or not convicted, I'm sorry. Only 40 days later, she was arrested and charged with the murder of Devin Routier. They never charged her with Damon because if she ever got off or wasn't convicted of Devin, they wanted to have a second chance to try her. Yeah.
That's smart.
It is, but also a little shady. Like, kind of, like, breaking
it's the like, rules. That's known information, so that's kind of shitty, but...
Right, and a lot of people are saying that, like, you know, she should have been charged for both of them because it was convicted with the same weapon. And I'm like, okay, you can't be a Darley supporter and claim that, but also claim that one's blood wasn't found on, you know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
So, whatever. So, the weird thing about this is the jury actually, in the trial, they asked to see this video at least 7 times. So they played it over and over and over and over, and it clearly weighed heavy on them, which I find weird. Like, I would need to see it once, and I'd be like, oh, that's good. Like,
okay. Well, I feel like people expect when, like, someone dies for you to be, like, crying and, you know, like, a mess.
Sure. So
I get why.
Yeah.
At the same time, like you were saying, people grieve in different ways, so... I mean, I think that it's fucked up, but...
Yeah, but everybody grieves in different ways. And this was, like, a weird time because only 2 years prior was the Susan Smith case, which a lot of people were calling Darley Texas's Susan Smith, killing her kids. If anybody doesn't know, Susan Smith went on camera to plead for her kids' safe return. Mm-hmm. It turned out that she actually pushed her car into a lake and murdered her 2 children. So... a lot of people saw this as, like, tainted, if you will.
Yeah.
And the media was kind of the same with the two. So now I kind of want to go back to that video because what they didn't see was the hidden camera and microphone that the police bugged the gravesite with. And that was a 2-hour vigil prior to the Silly String incident. And everybody was, like, sobbing at this and, like, remembering the boys. Like, it was 2 hours.
Right.
So... I don't know. Like, is that, like, then do you understand the Silly String maybe a little bit more in the fact that they spent 2 hours mourning and being depressed and devastated and they were, like, trying to make something light of it? I don't know. I find it still weird and still very inappropriate. But.
Yeah.
So, and this was kind of taboo because.
Wait, but why would they bug the gravesite?
To see if anything was said, to. You know what I'm saying?
Because they had an idea that she or he...
Oh, 100%. 4 days later, she was arrested.
Right.
They had an idea pretty much that night. They had collected their evidence at this point in time. They had seen her in the hospital. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So, this was actually kind of taboo because it's not totally legal to do that. Yes. So, there was actually a trial about this, about the police bugging the gravesite. And they all pled the fifth and no one got punished because there was no evidence of anything, apparently. However, the defense had that 2-hour vigil in their possession and they never utilized it. And I just feel like that was a huge mistake, like, especially considering the fact that the prosecution spent so much time making the point that, making the point about Darley's lifestyle and looks. Like,
right.
You know what I mean? Like, they really... They talked about her boob job. They talked about her bleach blonde hair. They talked about her painted nails, which apparently was such a big thing in 1996. And it was like a total character.
I was doing my nails in 1996. I was like 2 or 3.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
I love my pink nails.
Hell yeah.
But it was a total character assassination. Like, they really, like, dug into, like, who she was. And I don't think that's the point here. The point is the evidence. So on top of this, the trial was moved from Dallas to Kerrville, Texas, which was an extremely conservative town. And the reason that it was moved there was because so many people in Dallas knew about the murders. It was really hard to get a jury together. However, they can't understand why it was moved to Kerrville because, like I said, it was so conservative. Like, seeing this woman on trial for her kid's murder, like, you're going to feel a type of way.
Uh-huh.
You know? And when I was watching The Last Defense, because I did watch it, I just felt that it was so unbelievably biased that it pissed me off. I remember they interviewed a juror, and the juror said, "What kind of mother gets big breast implants? I sure wouldn't." Like, that's irrelevant. Isn't that irrelevant to you?
I mean, I would think that's irrelevant.
But again, it was a conservative town. Like, they knew what they were doing. And I don't really find any relevance to that. I don't really find any relevance to really that whole silly string thing. I really don't. Okay. I think it's weird.
Okay.
But needless to say, on February 4th, 1997, less than a year after the murders, Darlie was found guilty of capital murder and was sentenced to death. She has been sitting on death row for 22 years and is still trying to appeal her conviction. Now, from what I understand, it's very difficult to schedule, like, an execution date on death row for women. A lot of people struggle with putting women to death. And it's actually shocking that she got the death penalty, to be honest. Because I do believe, I don't believe there was enough reasonable doubt to say that she was innocent, but I believe there was enough reasonable doubt to put her in life in, to give her life in prison as opposed to the death penalty.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
So yeah, she's been sitting on death row for 22 years and she's trying to utilize DNA evidence to appeal her conviction and at least get a new trial, which I just, at the end of the day, even if she got that right, she's going to get tried the next day with the other son's murder. And in June of 2011, Darren filed for divorce from Darlie.
So long.
Right. They were together for a really long time. And he claims this isn't because he doesn't believe in her innocence or because he doesn't love her. He claims he'll always love her because she's the mother of his children, even though whatever. But he needed to move on with his life.
Right. Because there's literally no way of them being together again.
Right. And that's kind of what he said. He was like, you know, after all of this back and forth, like, how long am I going to wait? Like, I deserve happiness, too. And this is the thing. I don't know that I believe that he didn't have something to do with this.
Oh, I definitely 100% think he has something to do with it.
Super weird.
Either he knew, like, that she did it, or he has something to do with it. Like, either way, he knew something.
Yeah. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he, like, planned this and, like, they both agreed that, like, Darlie would take the fall because it's, like, harder to convict a mother than it is to convict a father. And they thought it would go differently.
Yeah, now she's fucked.
But, yeah. So now, baby Drake is 24. And he's never actually even gotten to hug his mother, which they both claim is extremely difficult for him and her, which I feel really bad for him for that because I do believe that he genuinely believes in his mother's innocence because he was a baby. Like, this is all he's ever known. This is what his dad's told him, what she's told him. Like, I feel really, really sorry for him because I can't imagine what it's like to not hug your mom, you know? Especially if you think she's innocent. If you think she's innocent.
Right.
Of this. Because he believes in her innocence. But, like I said, this case always gets me around and I go back and forth with my opinion. But at the end of the day, I can't help but look at, like, everything in its entirety and believe that she's guilty. I think she is where she belongs.
Yeah.
You know? Because I was actually talking to Steven about this, because this is also one of Steven's favorite, like, cases. Like, he gets so into it. Yeah, I don't know how him and I heard of it, but then we started hearing about the last defense and, like, got into that. And he says he always goes back to the sock. The sock really, like, poses a question in his mind. And again, I'm sure I missed some things that may make Darlie seem a little more innocent.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because you can only get so much in, but I don't know. At the end of the day, I think that I'm always going to stand where I stand in the fact that she's guilty.
Oh, she's definitely guilty.
But it's crazy, like, if you go online and read, like, people's comments and Reddit and stuff, and if you type in Darlie Routier into, also I always want to say Routier, if you type that into Google, like, people, like, the majority of people believe that she's innocent.
Ugh.
And it's all based on, like, the police lied, the nurse lied, and that's what she says. Oh, well, that's a lie, or cross-contamination. Like, so you're telling me every police officer has, like, lied and cross-contaminated, like, all these scenes? And that's the thing. Like, I remember, like, seeing something about the jury, and they were, like, I was watching Lisa Gibbons from, like, the 90s. And I was watching the episode about Darlie, and they had Darlie's family, and they had jurors there. And the jurors were saying, like, Lisa asked them, did you go into this thinking that Darlie was guilty? Or did you go into it thinking she was innocent? And the juror was like, no, of course we went into this wanting her to be innocent. Like, no one wants to believe that a mother is going to murder her children.
Yeah.
No one wants to believe that. But the evidence pointed to the fact that that's exactly what happened, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And she can claim innocence all she wants.
I just don't understand how you can claim you're innocent, but you were so sloppy. Like, it's so obvious you were.
Right. Like, I really struggle with an intruder being there.
No, there was no intruder. She was a dumbass that tried to make it look like there was an intruder, but didn't, I don't know, do the best. She was just sloppy.
Right. I just struggle with the motive. Like, do you think that this was like she like snapped and it happened? Or do you think she like planned this, cut the window first, like went through the motion? Do you know what I'm saying? I think she cut the window first. I honestly do. Because there was no blood in that garage.
Yeah.
The light went on.
I wonder what would happen if those kids never wanted to have a sleepover.
And that's the other thing that's so convenient to me. Like, the fact that Darren and the baby are upstairs and you three are downstairs.
Yeah. I don't even know what to say.
I know. I don't even...
I mean, I'm not a mom, obviously. But, like, I don't know. I could never kill anyone. That's really my thing, actually.
Well, yeah.
I mean, I think that if I had to, I could. I think I could get away with it, but I don't. Why? No. My conscience would be like.
No, I agree. And I'm sorry, but what intruder is like going in and just killing these two kids for fun? Like,
fuck these kids.
Weird. And like, all right, you kill the kids first.
Yeah.
Who does that?
Yeah, and if you're gonna kill two kids and like stab them like repeatedly, what's one more? Just fucking do it. Don't
right.
Just slice.
And the adult. The adult is the one you slice. That's yeah. For the kids, not the adult.
I would slice the kids and stab the adult.
Yeah, like the kids aren't even gonna remember you. They were sleeping.
Yeah.
And like I just the fact that the like method changed.
Uh-huh.
From stab to slice. I don't know.
At least be consistent. Stab yourself a few times.
Right? And the bruise.
That bruise, I just don't understand.
Right, like, you could not convince me that that was from a struggle of any intruder. I don't care if all the evidence pointed to an intruder. I'd be like, that bitch still faked that bruise.
I feel that the husband... like, did something to her after to create the bruise because he might have found out or she told him that, like, she snapped and he's like, well, yeah. Let's make this more believable and let me beat the shit out of you.
Yeah, like, took a bat or something?
Yeah, something to make her look worse than she was.
I just have never seen a bruise like that.
No. Oh my god, no.
It's like somebody ran over her arm.
Literally.
You know.
Yeah.
That's all I really have for this case. I don't know if you have any more thoughts on it, but I just, this one always blows my mind.
I'm kind of speechless. I'm not going to lie.
Did you think that this is where tonight was going?
No. I mean, I knew, like, the kind of direction where it was going, but I don't know. People are fucked up.
So fucked up. It's, like, heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And what sucks to me is, like, so I tried to listen to a bunch of podcasts on this, right? Like, to kind of, like, listen to everything I could, watch everything I could, read everything I could. Almost every podcast is for her innocence.
Oh my god, well, here we go. We're gonna have our first, like, set of haters.
I know. Everybody's going to be, like, at us. If you ever get a chance, though, like, listen to some of the ones that are, like, in her favor. Because you're going to literally be like, I can't listen to this. This is bullshit.
Do you understand that I will not sleep tonight? I'm going to be up, like, listening and watching videos. I'm going to watch her thing from 6 months ago.
Do you know what I got a lot of my information from? And I really, really like to use that I use as a source because it's a lot of information. It's probably too much. It's a website called Darlie Routier Fact and Fiction.
Wow.
And it has everything you could ever need.
I'll have to look it up.
But yeah, I think that's it for today's episode. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to Wine, Crime, and TV Time. We will see you on Friday, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see you on Friday with
Teen Mom.
Yeah, Teen Mom. A more upbeat.
On a better note, hopefully there'll be no murders.
Right. So we'll be back with what, Teen Mom 2 and Young and Pregnant?
Yep. Yep.
So yeah, please subscribe to our podcast and give us some reviews. It really helps us out. We're on Spotify, iTunes, pretty much anywhere that you can listen to podcasts. So yeah, thank you guys so much for listening and we'll see you later in the week. Bye. Bye.